And that masterpiece theater music means that all is right with the world, in spite of all of the available evidence, because Scott Washington is here in the studio for another round of History Matters. How are you?
Well, I'm doing just fine, Aaron, and it's always good to hear that that theme song.
Yeah.
And this is a week when we celebrate Prince Charles' birthday, so I think that it's appropriate that it was played, and I hope he's listening in.
There you go.
Since this great show is streamed worldwide.
Yes, you can stream this show in merry old England.
That's right, and you know how appropriate, because we've got Hillsborough right nearby, and it's the streets in the historic district are in the same place and with the same names as a map of 1768. Mm-hmm. King Street is named after King George III. So,
yep.
You know, I would hope the royal family would listen in.
Right? Exactly.
Wonderful.
Right. I'm not too impressed by the fact that the streets are in the same place.
No.
But the streets that are in the same
wider
name,
yeah.
That's impressive.
Horse
especially time. Considering the fact that Hillsborough is just up the road from Chapel Hill, which is,
right.
I think, judging from the evidence, legally required to change the name of every building and street district every 5 years or so.
Yes, it seems something.
We're
like
here
it.
At University well, Place, formerly University
right.
Mall. I just walked past Carolina Square,
there
formerly University
about
Square.
That. Is there something about it? Yeah, the Orange County that does. That's true. Hillsborough had the Hillsborough with the UGG on it until
yes.
the 19th century, and then it disappears. And it's like Pittsburgh. It's Hillsborough without that.
Yeah.
And then it takes an act of the legislature in the 1960s to actually say, yes, the name of Hillsborough shall be Hillsborough, because they have, you know, legal documents
with
and they
UGH,
had to say, okay,
yeah.
it's the same place.
Remember when that was the thing the General Assembly did? Adding UGH
yes,
onto...
Exactly.
Now it's just adding UGH onto the lips and tongues of everyone who looks at the things that they're passing.
Well, you know, we do have some profound and interesting things this week. One has to do with mice, and it's 2 days... Friday, November 17th, mm-hmm. 1970 is when the computer mouse was, a patent was issued to Douglas Engelbert for the first computer
We've
mouse.
We've got three of them right here.
Yeah,
and
there
only
you go.
Two computers,
isn't that amazing?
Which is very strange.
And it seems so appropriate because on November 18th, 1928 is when Mickey Mouse made his official debut
yep.
in Steamboat Willie.
Steamboat Willie,
which
yeah.
is kind of a, you know, fun to think about. Like, really?
Yeah.
And, of course, Walt Disney would always say, remember, folks, it all began with a mouse.
With a mouse, yeah.
And he was having kind of mixed success before then, but once that kind of took off.
Well, then, it's also the first cartoon with sound. And you
yeah.
think about, like, how early Disney
oh
gets into
gosh.
That game.
Yes.
Because 1927 is when The Jazz Singer comes out,
right.
the first talkie. And then just less than a year later, or I guess a little bit more than a year later, out comes Disney with Steamboat
right.
Willie. So he saw what was happening and said,
yes.
this is the future.
Well,
and
he continued to be an innovator all throughout his life, which
yeah.
was amazing. In fact, the people designing Walt Disney World kept saying, no, we can't do it. And Walt Disney would say, yeah, you can. He'd
yeah,
draw
you
it,
can.
And they'd go, oh.
They
had to change from being engineers to imagineers because they had to think outside the box
yeah.
because he did.
Well, just because no one had done anything like that before.
That's right.
You have to sort of reconceive what's possible. Right.
Right. right.
Yeah.
Well, and here's another one that's more serious history, but it takes place on Sunday the 19th, 1863. Mm-hmm. It wasn't Sunday then, but the Gettysburg Address. Which, of course, we know this is one of that important moment in history, but that's a very short speech, and yet it becomes memorable. It could be printed
mm-hmm.
in newspapers. Somebody described it as a Twitter speech because it could be printed in all the newspapers.
That
and
is
I'm not
fair,
sure
yeah.
that that's the complete right way that he would have thought
maybe,
of that.
Maybe, but yeah.
Well, the interesting thing is, of course, my ancestor, Edward Everett, was the other speaker at Gettysburg who spoke for 2 hours and, you know,
was the
at,
featured
yes,
speaker.
He
like,
was the
oh,
featured.
And the president
and
was also
on and
there.
On, and,
yeah.
you know, Lincoln has a war. Well, the interesting thing is the other contribution, the little known fact was he'd been asked, Edward Everett, a month before to dedicate the ceremony. And he said, no, I need more time to prepare,
mm-hmm.
which was really good because at that point in October, Lincoln was actually overseeing a pivotal battle. I'm not sure he would have been there.
Mm.
So, but he did say to his credit, Mr. President, you said more in your 2 minutes than I said in my 2 hours.
Yeah.
Trust me, I've read the speech that
he
Edward Everett
pretty
was,
much
was
did,
not.
Yeah.
yeah, it was not worth.
Was it an okay speech?
It went into excruciating detail about the battles, which were, oh my goodness,
yeah.
much more than Than anybody really needed to know about at that point, since there had been so many, so much death. So that's kind of one of those interesting things that happens. Also, now this is a kind of a cool one. On the November 16th, 1765.
So this is today in history.
That's right.
Yes.
When North Carolina's new stamp master, William Houston, was in Wilmington, and he was supposed to be collecting taxes for this stamp
act. Had, like, just arrived in Wilmington as well. Like, he gets off the boat, and he's greeted by just, like, a throng of angry mob.
That's right, who persuade him that it would be in his best interest to resign. He does, and he's promptly hoisted up on shoulders, and they have a parade for him.
Oh, good.
And then he goes on to actually...
So they were right, then. It wasn't his
best
interest.
Oh, yeah, and not only that, but they really liked him, so they made sure to reward him after that with some other positions.
Good.
But it was a... Stamp Act was a disaster, trying to pay for all these troops here in the America after the Seven-Year Wars, 1754. We call it the French and Indian War. And 10,000 troops and 1,500 officers. How do you pay for them? Great Britain said, well, let's leave them there in the colonies.
Yes.
And that was not well thought of, because this idea of taxation without representation never goes over big anytime.
It is really interesting, though, and this is 1765, so this is pre-revolution, pre-founding of the U.S., but you see these moments in American history throughout, and we haven't had too many like them recently. So whenever we see overseas, or whenever we see in another country, like a throng of people in the center of the capital city and the government is overthrown, we think, oh man, thank goodness we don't have that much chaos here. But you look in American history and you see countless examples of angry mobs and throngs forming together and either overthrowing a government or compelling people to act, in the case of William Houston. Sometimes we look back fondly on this historically, and sometimes we look back and think, oh my God, how could people have done this?
Think of the Arab Spring that happened not too long ago in multiple countries, where people said, we want a voice, we're not being heard, and said, no, enough. It does happen.
Yeah. And it happens here.
It does. I will tell you about that. Now, you know, war is part of history, too. Mm-hmm. And on November 18th, 1781, is when British forces evacuated Wilmington. And the reason why that's kind of important is because in taking Wilmington, and Major James Craig actually burned down William Hooper's house, his estate, Finian, and he had to flee and ends up in Hillsboro. So it's kind of interesting, all these dominoes that that occur.
Yeah.
But that's part of the British coming in at the end of the war, thought, everything's settled because of what happens in North Carolina. We talked about the Stamp Act, but we have the regulators, and then when there's Alamance County in 1771, the British kind of write off what happens here in North Carolina. They come back in 1776, but then they say, no, this disturbance is up north. We'll take care of it.
When
they do come back, they have a different kind of experience at the end of the war, and that is a turning point for the defeat of the British.
It's also interesting the way that we tell the history of the American Revolution. Yeah. We kind of assume that the British were right on that, and we tell the history of sort of early kind of colonialism and up through the American Revolution and the writing of the Constitution. We focus on Massachusetts, we focus on Virginia, Philadelphia, and New York, but we could tell the story in a whole bunch of different ways.
Oh, that's it. Well, I was born in the Midwest, grew up in New England, and I'd been to all these places, Lexington, Concord, and I thought, I knew everything except that I could never figure out, even as a boy, why the Minutemen fought so ferociously until I came here. Mm-hmm. And then it's suddenly the pieces clicked, because what happens here becomes known up north, and the sense is, okay, what happened in Alamance County and the terrible death toll, that's not going to happen to us up in New England.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why the people are willing to risk whatever they could for freedom at that point. Of course, that becomes true in North Carolina as well, but you're absolutely 110% right that North Carolina's part of this story is very pivotal. And I'm sure every other state in the colonies would say so, but
exactly
realistically, objectively, I would say North Carolina plays a pivotal place in all of that.
Yep.
And of course, Hillsborough had a Revolutionary War battle in its streets in September of 1781. So it's kind of a town that's marked by some very, very pivotal, interesting issues.
And that battle really backed up traffic on Churton Street, didn't it?
Yes, I'm sure it did. And they kidnapped the governor, so, you know.
Yeah,
the extra people they had.
It.
Okay, come on, keep it moving.
Keep it moving. All right, nothing to see here.
That's right.
We're speaking with Scott Washington, and Scott sends me, and we talked about this before, Scott sends me this list of all of the events that happened in history from which we're picking and choosing just a couple here, but there's one really cryptic item on Saturday, November 18th, the launching of the USS Maine in 1889, with a reference to a Hillsborough connection after that.
Oh my gosh.
I can't let you get away without telling me what that means.
Yes, well, the USS Maine, of course, remember,
remember the Maine. Yes.
Well, of course, it blows up in the Havana Harbor, and that is one of the precipitating interests. Events for why the United States gets involved in a war with Spain in Cuba. Well, all right, fast forward a number of years, and there is a fellow who, and I don't recall his name right now, who loves Daniel Boone. Now, this is kind of an odd, you're like, how does this have to do anything with USMA? Well, I'll tell you. He loves everything to do with Daniel Boone, and so anytime he finds a place where Daniel Boone had a major impact, he erects a monument and finds out that, yes, indeed, Daniel Boone was hired in colonial times by Judge Henderson and the Transylvania Company, which was going to open up a portion of what we now call Kentucky. In fact, they even lobbied for the state to be called Transylvania, which Congress laughed at and said, no,
that's
I
good.
Don't think
yes.
so. How many times can we seek out the words?
No, not going
one,
to
two,
happen,
three.
No.
So, anyways.
I did not know where you were going with that. That's good.
Well, a little Sesame Street there. You know, obviously, things I listen to with my kids. And so this guy, this collector who loves Daniel Boone, knows about Daniel Boone being in Hillsborough, not kind of passing through, but being hired. He erects this monument down there on King Street, right where the old courthouse is, and puts up, and it's made out of stone, and it's made out of, there's a metal plaque on both sides.
Is it still there?
It is still there.
Okay.
And if you look closely, not only does it have something about Daniel Boone on it, but it says, from the USS Maine, this guy salvaged metal, melted it down, and then made these plates that are up there. And so you can actually go and you can touch.
Oh, that's
metal.
Fascinating.
Isn't that fascinating?
Well, he put up all of these other ones. Did he do this with the ship?
As far as I
ship?
Know, yes, he did.
Oh, wow.
Which is really amazing. But to know that you can go into Hillsborough, right there in the corner, and touch metal that was from the USS Maine. First battleship.
That's fascinating.
Modern battleship.
Oh, man.
So a little bit of a...
Okay, where is this again? Because next time it's on King Street, where is
this
it?
This is right, if you go down into the historic district on Churton Street, right at the corner of Churton and King.
Yes.
Right in front of what we call the old courthouse with the pillars. You're going to see a monument. It's made out of stone. It's about 5 feet tall, looks like a giant arrowhead.
Uh-huh.
And there.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
But you look down the bottom and it's like, what
from
is
the USS
this?
Maine.
That's right. I mean, I find
I know
that
what
kind
that
of
is. Yeah,
fascinating.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's these kind of funny, you know, interesting little things of history. And you mentioned about the 18th, and that's when Marvin Pipkin is born. I think we've talked about him before. The American chemist who is credited with inventing a light bulb frosted on the inside. Now, this was a challenge by GE saying nobody will do
the
it.
The impossible
this is,
challenge. Yeah.
And they just thought it was a joke because they just wanted to see people try until he did it. He didn't know that it was a joke.
Yeah.
Which I think, you know, that's how life is sometimes. People don't know that it can't be done and say, well, let's do it anyways.
Well, it's Disneyland,
yes,
right?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
We think it can't be done until someone says, why
that's,
not?
That's right.
Let's just go ahead and do it.
Those are the kind of things that I think are kind of fun. But I'm glad you mentioned that because I always love telling that story because it's so, it's only because I would love walking around Hillsborough and I came across, I'm looking at, what is this? And when I discovered this history, I was just delighted.
Yeah. That's really cool.
Yeah.
And speaking of things that people thought couldn't be done, let's talk about Nellie Bly in 1889, November 14th, the Tuesday of this week, who Jules Verne writes Around the World in 80 Days.
Oh, yes, yes, yes,
about
yes.
this fictional character who's able to travel around the world in 80 days,
right.
which was just astronomical at the time. Like now, again, we talked about this
before
with New Hampshire to Philadelphia.
That's
like,
right.
you can get around the world in a day or less now, but 80 days was just astronomical.
People are hearing us anywhere in the world
exactly.
now. Yeah.
And people thought, oh, no, that's impossible. That's science fiction, and it'll never be done. And this journalist, Nellie Bly, female journalist in 1889, says, well, if a fictional character can do it, why not a real person? And she sets off and beats the fake record by 8 days.
Gets
around in 72.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah,
yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yep.
It's kind of good to see. Is this life imitating art?
Yeah.
I think so.
I think it's life exceeding art in this case. Yeah.
Which is kind of the fun thing. I also liked about on that same day is when Claude Monet is born.
Yes.
And now I did not know this, that he had cataract surgery.
Yeah.
And prior to that, his paintings are slightly different in coloring because of the way he was seeing things. And after it, it's slightly different. It's from reddish to bluish. It's like, wow.
Yeah.
That's a whole other way of looking at things, literally.
People are like, oh, man, it's a whole new way of looking at the world. He's like, what? I'm just painting what I'm seeing here.
Well,
like,
and you know, that's
you think
what
it's blurry?
Well, I think that's what what we get excited about history is because it gives you new eyes to see current events or to put your life in perspective as well and realize there are great heroes and great examples for us all to emulate.
Absolutely. That's going to have to wrap us up. But again, that's History Matters here on WCHL. Oop, I just hit the wrong button. Let me actually play the... there we go. All right. History Matters with Scott Washington. Thank you so much.
Love it.